This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski on 104.5 The Zone.
Back at it for the second hour of the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue Online, edleysbbq.com. You can also download the Edley's app for all of the menu items and for curbside pickup. They also deliver through Postmates. Alongside Paul Kuharski in Brentwood, I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. David Reed, the chairman of the board. Coach Mack continues with us. We just heard the headlines there from David Reed. And in about 15 minutes, Paul, during this time of broadcasting from our home studios, we've been trying to connect with some guests that we have never had on the show before and an opportunity to have them on via Skype and chat face-to-face, so to speak. And one of those guests coming up is Mets legend Hojo. Howard Johnson is on the show, and there's a lot of different topics to get into. He was most recently the hitting coach for the Nashville Sounds in 2019 for the Texas Rangers organization. But there's so many different paths, so many different branches to the tree that we can take in our conversation at 11:15.
Looking forward to connecting with him. Had him on the list for a long time. He was gracious enough to work through Skype with us last night, and interviews are better, our long ones, on Skype than by phone. So we're looking forward to that. Kirby just gave a big nod to Howard Johnson. So it's a stamped with Kirby's approval.
Kirby Allen Kirby joins us as Mac during the break was laughing for a good portion of it because Paul was describing de-pantsing the mannequin is how we started the show today while he was looking for the bathing suit to take with him to Florida this weekend. And Kirby, you know, I mentioned, you know, there's a chance that he would have had a mannequin in his man shed. And he goes, no, but he'd like to have a mannequin personally.
Wow.
Kirby, I'm
why is that, Kirby?
One.
Well, I mean, for fun, basically, to mess with people and the artistic things you can do.
Of course.
But several years ago, a friend of mine and his roommate, they had a mannequin. And they would dress it up occasionally as a guy, sometimes as a female with a wig and a dress.
A nurse.
They would put it on there. They would, like, stand it on their deck or maybe, like, an easy chair over in the corner. They would put it in that so it looked like it was sitting there. And it would – you'd come in, and it would kind of take you aback. You're like, oh. And then you would realize, oh, you got me again. But there's endless amounts of fun to be done. Just spooking people. And plus, you could use it for different poses for artistic purposes, for paintings.
Yeah,
a live model.
He's not even mentioning them taking it into the bedroom, and
that's a different movie. But a mannequin's not going to help you much. I mean, I guess, you know, unless you're into corpses or something.
Kirby Allen Kirby, engineer extraordinaire, and whenever we're on the road, he's the fourth host of the Midday 180, and he joins us per Mac's request every time that Coach Mac is with us. He's got to have his dose of Kirby and the truth, according to Kirby. And we retell some past truths to entertain the present as we broadcast from home. And, Paul, I'll see if you remember this story. Kirby did this at the age of 13. Did he drink a whole fifth of Wild Turkey? Did he come across a dead body while swimming the Ohio River? Or did he tell his grandfather he was leaving the house and he hitchhiked from Tennessee to Ohio?
D, shot heroin. No, he told his grandfather he was leaving the house and hitchhiked, though I thought he turned back like all people who say they're leaving the house.
At 13, he did hitchhike from Tennessee to Ohio. Kirby set up the story of leaving.
And he was kidnapped until he was 15, and that's how he turned into this guy. He was raised by a serial killer.
So, but I'm envisioning you with your thumb out the side of the road. Is that how it went down? It
wasn't quite that bad. What we had had a major disagreement about a month earlier.
Okay.
And this was, and it had been brewing. And instead of confronting it and settling it, we did like a lot of Kirby's do. We just looked at each other and kept on about our business without speaking for a while. And it was festering. And a family friend who was up visiting my uncle in Cookville, not far from our farm, and I knew Silas was heading back to Ohio, and he lived just outside of my hometown. And I knew when he had been down for about a month helping with some construction work with my uncle rebuilding a home. So anyway, I knew he was going back. He had his truck, and it was full of all of his tools and all his stuff. And so Grandpa and I, it came to a head, and I said, well, I'll see you. And I packed, and he just looked at me and scoffed and assumed, you know, like most parents would, that, you know, this won't last long. It's a cold world out there. And I had, I don't know, $37 in cash, and I offered my uncle, like we called him uncle, but it wasn't really family, Silas. I said, I'll give you this $37 if I can ride with you to Ohio. And he looked, you know, he scoffed at me, and I'm like, no, I'm serious. He goes, what's your granddad said? He said, he said, goodbye, good luck. And so he knew my grandfather and figured he was trying to teach me a lesson that I assume he thought that I would back out. And by Monticello, Kentucky, he realized I was along for the ride. And he dropped me off at my grandmother's house in Bucyrus. And I was up there for about 3 weeks before I was told that, you know, you're going back to Tennessee.
How'd you get back?
My dad drove me to the Columbus airport and put me on a plane. American Airlines, one way, 1 hour.
So Kirby hit back. Upon your reemergence?
For the first, it was a little chilly. He greeted me at the airport and got my stuff without saying much, made sure that I was okay. Said that, got to get you ready to get in school. And on the drive back, wanted to know if I had that out of my system. And by the very fact that my dad drove me to the airport and put me on the plane when I thought that I was moving back up there with him, made me realize that my dad couldn't be depended upon and that I owed my grandfather an apology.
I'm still intrigued by the $37. What did Silas do? Like, he pull over at the immediate gas station and go get a sixer, or what did he do with the $37?
He told me to keep my $37. I'd need it.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, hopefully he didn't take it from me.
No, he didn't take. No. Oh,
what'd you spend that on?
Well, I spent some of it on food, a burger, and something on the drive up there, and
smokes.
I got up there the week the fair started, so I probably spent some of it at the fair. But $37 in what would have been 1977?
That was,
I've been hauling hay and had a few bucks put back.
Kirby, this is why we also need the update on the contractors, the electricians, and everything that's swarming your home, because every week there is an update with your home after it was hit by the tornado in March. You continue to sit in what looks like a jail cell from Guantanamo Bay. And I'm guessing there's no update.
Well, we had a come to the big guy meeting this morning. We had electric. Everything was running along smoothly, and by appearances was looking great. The electricians came in this morning to do some work that they needed to do. When we found out that the roof framers crew had cut a wire up in the attic, they had buried two underneath decking in the attic. They were supposed to have run some other wiring, just put it in place before they're finishing so that the electricians, it would be there for the electricians. And what they did was actually just attach to a light switch another existing light, which was not correct.
So they're redoing everything?
They're having, not all the work, but the electricians are basically having to pull all of the damn flooring up in the attic and wire it correctly to correct the problem.
How did you not oversee this the first time?
Well, it was in the attic, and they have breakers turned off, and so you know that lights and things aren't going to work in that end of the house on the den side. So when a light doesn't work in a closet or you knew that that was part of the problem. It wasn't until, and when I found a wire and I asked a question about it, but it goes much worse than that. They had buried the box for the smoke detector under insulation and then pulled a wire going to nowhere and fed it in and put it in a box as if it were the wire for the smoke detector.
Anyway. Kirk, It's going to take longer to rebuild your home than it took 440 to get the green light that it was complete.
It burnt to the ground, and we were back in it in 5 months and a week. Okay.
All right.
In their defense, this group, we went through three before we got to them, so that they've been at it, say, since May 1st. But I sarcastically asked one day, will we get in this before August, back in May? And I'm thinking, before everything's done now, I mean, it's probably going to be September, which is not going to be very happy with.
Mac, we're going to have to do something about this and make sure Kirby gets this done before September. Kirby, keep us updated,
Kirby, man. Can you steal a mannequin for me? I'm thinking between wears of this bathing suit, ideal if I could dry it on a mannequin.
Let me jump in.
There are probably some weird thrift stores and stuff in the town or junk stores where you could probably find one.
On deck. Howard Johnson about to join us. Kirby Allen Kirby. You can follow him on Instagram. Kirby, appreciate it.
Kirby, hope you get your wire fixed, brother.
Well, they'll fix it. And I'm not ripping the main contractor. These are subs that didn't do what they were supposed to have done. And then anyway, but it looks good and it's coming along. It's just, this was a real frustration to find that they didn't do what they told us that they did.
I have an idea. Paul, I think we broadcast live from Kirby's home until construction is complete. That's the new
show. Wiring won't allow for better internet than I have.
It only dealt with lighting. It didn't have anything to do with the plug.
Mac,
guys, be good. Love you.
Appreciate it.
See you, guys. See you. Thanks.
Hojo is next. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
Meet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life, because the Mets are really sucking the ball.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Alongside Paul Kuharski, I'm Jonathan Hutton, David Reed making the show happen for us. And from time to time, as we broadcast live from our home offices during the social distancing and everything else that's been going on, we've invited some guests that we've never had on the show before to join us via the magic of Skype. And today's guest, it falls right in line with that. Really cool to be joined by Howard Johnson. Hojo, who played 14 years in Major League Baseball, one of the most well-rounded hitters in the game. And he's since been a hitting coach, both with the Mets and Mariners organizations. Most recently, for the Nashville Sounds, working in the Texas Rangers organization. Hojo, what's up, man?
How you guys doing today? All right? Doing all right?
Doing great.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
86 Mets, such a famous team. We're hearing so much these days with all that's going on socially about how a healthy locker room kind of reflects what America can be. We've also heard a lot about what that 86 locker room was. Maybe not your most conventional group of guys coming together. What was that locker room like? Obviously, when it counted on the field, you guys were all together. But behind the scenes in the clubhouse, was it a kumbaya locker room?
Yeah, you know what, guys? It was pretty good locker room. It wasn't always kumbaya. The main thing is we all basically pulled for the same thing, and that was to win. And we did back each other up. Everybody backed each other up no matter what. If somebody was challenged by, you know, another ball club or whatever, players wouldn't hesitate to go fight. You know, they'd want to, we got a lot of fights that year. And a lot of that had to do with just guys having each other's back. So when things happened, you know, things escalated quickly on the field. But we were united in the fact that we wanted to win, and that was our driving force.
Hojo with us on the Midday 180. Hey, Howard, if you don't mind, if you will go back to the area of the home you were in when you first answered this call, I think we'll have a better reception internet-wise. Okay. And while he does that, Paul, I'm curious from your perspective as the Yankees fan, are you in 86, are you pulling for the Mets or Red Sox?
Oh, the Howard's going to hate this. In 86, I was a junior in high school. And so I'm a huge Yankee fan. They were not good at this stage. And I hate the Red Sox, obviously. But there are no Red Sox fans in my high school, right?
Right.
But I have to deal with Mets fans. And so I choose to root for the one time in my life for the Red Sox. And then I watch Bill Buckner with the error, and it was torture in my high school to watch my Mets fans, Howard, come out on the right side of that. So you guys caused me a lot of grief. What was it like to take over New York, which is always more of a Yankees town, but not in that decade?
Yeah, not in that decade, and. It was weird because when I came over from the Tigers, I was told, the Mets, that New York was the Yankees town.
We'll have to reconnect with Howard and maybe have him call in, Paul. That may be the next thing. We have tried to set this up. We tested last night, and sometimes it just doesn't work it out with Skype.
I'll send him the phone number here, and we'll pick up right where we left off there. Sorry about it. Like we said,
that's fine. I mean, it's out of our control on that.
The things that happen. So, or I'll send.
I'm sending you the number right now to get him to call in on the fly. Just how we're having to do things now, broadcasting from home, unfortunately. But I can't wait to get back into the conversation with him. You mentioned, as a Yankees fan, having to pull against, the Mets because of everyone that you're in school with, and they happen to be playing the Yankees rival. But he was drafted by the Yankees and then turned down the contract initially. And it was like the 23rd round, 24th round. And the next year, he was the 12th overall pick in the draft by the Tigers. That is quite the leap.
Yeah, I didn't know the Yankees part of that at all. But I knew he came from Detroit, and I knew, he and Ray Knight were big figures, obviously, on the Mets in 86, which was such a successful team. And then I knew in New York, the Mets fans who finally got, what they wanted, expected that they should have gotten more. That's one of those teams that was very good that people felt like they didn't get as much out of, should have gotten multiple championships out of a team with that talent. And didn't. I think we're reconnecting here on the phone.
Yeah, Reed's getting him on. I'll pass along that the NFL teams have sent out some other memos. They're being told they're forbidden from post-game interactions within 6 feet of each other.
That's not going to hold. It's just not going to hold.
Jersey exchanges between players. That's also going to be prohibited. Also, according to News Channel 5, Metro Nashville schools to begin the school year remotely as COVID-19 cases surge. Again, that's from News Channel 5. We have reconnected with Howard Johnson Hojo by phone. Thank you for being patient with us as we do this virtually on the show here, Howard.
So you were talking about the Mets over New York and what that was like. Pick up there, please.
Yeah, the Mets. I mean, when I got over there, I was, alerted that this was a Yankee town, that New York was a Yankee town. And, but it never felt like that because the Mets team was on the rise. The organization was on the rise. Some great players in Strawberry, Gooden, Keith Hernandez, that we traded for Gary Carter. So we had this influx of talent to go with the younger players, and Ray Knight ended up having a great season in 86. So, but things were, we were a curious bunch basically by the people. And so everything we did seemed like it got a lot of media play. Every home run was a curtain call. Teams hated that. Every team we played was like a rival at that point. And so it was just fun to be part of that group and to go through all that stuff, because nowadays, you don't really have maybe Boston and New York in some respects, but you don't have the same kind of rivalries, I don't think, that we had back then.
The 86 series, game six, describe your vantage point as the ball hit by Mookie Wilson went through Bill Buckner's legs. Were you on deck?
Yes, I was on deck. I was waiting my shot. The thing was, we'd already tied the game up, so all the pressure was off of us. And so it slipped so fast, being down to your last strike a couple of different times. So all of a sudden, there was no pressure on us. All the pressure was on them. You could see it kind of unfold. When the ball was hit, I thought Mookie had a chance to beat it out. And, Shea was a tough infield back in those days. It's not like they are now. Nowadays, they're like pool tables. They're so nice. But back then, Shea was a rough infield. And the ball will eat you alive if you are passive on it when you're going to get it. And any good infielder will tell you, you go get your good hop. And so what happened with Buckner is that he got caught on his heels. He had bad legs. And he was wearing these the very prehistoric Nike high tops that they made. And, he wasn't moving around too well in those things. And so he got caught on his heels, and the ball just skidded on him. And when it went to the outfield, I just threw my bat in the air and jumped and knew we'd won the game. It was just an amazing feeling at that point. But, just to kind of see that, it's almost like slow motion in your mind replaying it. I can still play it. I can still see it clearly in my mind.
Howard Johnson with us. Hojo, legendary player for the New York Mets. Dykstra describes in his book that he was sitting in the dugout having a conversation with you about how you couldn't believe in the middle of that game that you were going to lose the effing World Series. And then the Diamond Vision scoreboard at Shea accidentally flashed up, congrats, Boston Red Sox. Oh. And then that series of events unfolded that became a legendary moment.
Yeah, well, part of that whole exchange was Carter was going up and down the dugout to everybody on the bench saying he wasn't going to be the last out of the World Series. And he just kept telling everybody that. He'd look you in the face, get about 2 inches from you, and let you know that he wasn't going to be the last out. And that was his mindset. And it certainly played out that way. And I was standing next to Lenny, and he and I were talking, and we're thinking, I'm thinking to myself, there's no way it can be over. I just can't see it. Not after everything that had happened in the postseason prior to that. And we come back to a point where we had a chance to take control of the series and to let it go. I just never thought we would lose. That was my mindset that I had about that team. I never thought that we would lose, and that the best team always seems to come out on top, and we were the better team. And so all those thoughts are going through my mind. And of course you got Gary doing his thing, and I'm standing there next to Lenny, and we're just kind of watching what's going on. They put on the scoreboard, congratulations, Red Sox, World Series champions, and we're like looking over at their dugout. We're kind of like taking it all in. You can see these guys like celebrating in the dugout almost with two outs. And man, just to have it end like that, it's just got to be a gut punch. And we felt at that point there was no way we could lose game seven, and there's no way they could beat us. So it was pretty amazing.
Howard Johnson, our guest. How nervous do you get when you hear that Lenny Dykstra is writing a book?
I love Lenny. He's a classic 86 Met guy, in the fact that Lenny was when he came aboard as a young guy, he very very brash personality player, very confident in himself, hated losing, always figured out a way to land on his feet. He could make something almost happen out of nothing. And that he lived his life that way, after baseball, and, got in some trouble and stuff for sure. But, during the time it was an admirable quality to be around people like that, that refuse to lose, that know they're going to win all the time, that will fight you tooth and nail till they win. Good example is, Lenny never played golf in his life until he became on the team. And I wasn't much of a golfer, but I played a few times with the guys. And so Lenny was a gambler. That was his big deal. So he's in our card games, we on the planes and stuff. And in the hotel rooms, and you know, Lenny on the golf course basically would start betting from the first hole on, and every hole he lost, he doubled his bet. He doubled his bet. So he finally won one. And that was his, that was the way he did things. And it worked out for him a lot. And you know what? He pushed it to the limit. When he went to Philadelphia, he changed his body. He did anything he could. He wanted to be the best center fielder in baseball and be the reason why teams win. And that kind of attitude has to be there if you're going to be a champ.
You went 30-30. Was that in 87, I'm thinking? And you hit 36 homers in 87, the most ever for a National League switch hitter at that point in time. That 36 got, you know, beat and beat and beat and beat. But those numbers in that era were hefty. What's it like to look at them now? 30 and 30 was a big deal then too, which has become a lot more commonplace. When you look back, 36 home runs for a switch hitter back then, a huge number. People almost doubled that, or the home run record almost doubled that now. What do those numbers mean then? And what's it like to look back at them now? And in the context of what people do.
Yeah, I think from, you know, I always look back on the 30-30s as being something that I never set out to do them. When they told me I had a chance to do it, I'm like, okay, that's awesome. When they finally told me like how rare it is. And yeah, the home runs, to me, I'm more proud of the stolen bases. That's the thing that's such a grind. Like you have to have the mentality that you're going to be safe, that you're going to go when everybody knows you're going to go. And you have to keep coming back. You got to play tough. You got to make your focus on getting on base and different things. That's how I had to do it to be successful a hitter. But, the home runs were just, to me, I always learned when I was a kid, my dad always told me, so, you know, home runs are line drives that you just miss. And so I always thought about that, and anytime I wasn't a huge person. I was 5'11", you know, in my heyday, I was probably 190 pounds, 195 maybe, at my best. And, nowadays guys are like weightlifters out there. So I'm not the guy that's going to hit the ball out to all parts of the ballpark. I was primarily a pull hitter, and I used to kid the guys like when they, you know, would hit balls like 500 feet, you know, BP and stuff. And I'd say, well, they all count the same when they go over the fence. So there's, you know, I just tried to be as best a hitter as I possibly could and do things to help the team. The 36 home runs, the 38 in 1991 that led the league. I think Matt Williams was behind me. I think he had 33 or 34. It was reasonably close, but not super close. And I think in the American League, that's when Canseco and those guys were putting up 40 and 50 homers. And, so 38 was a big number. 36 was a big number. And, it's just crazy nowadays to see it, that, the ball is so much livelier. The ballparks are way more hitter friendly, on purpose. And, It's just a different game right now.
In 2019, how fortunate that events lined up, things lined up, that you were working for the Rangers, and the Rangers had become a Rangers affiliate, and there you were hitting coach for what happened to be your hometown minor league team.
Yeah, it was weird. That stuff never happens, and it sure enough, it only lasted a year. I wish it could have lasted longer. I enjoyed my time with the Rangers. It was fun. I love the people over there, and they just went a different route. I think they were trying to get younger in a lot of ways. And so, their organization went through a little bit of an overhaul, and a bunch of us got let go that shouldn't have been. And the industry has changed somewhat in the way that they are trying to do things. analytically, you know, just strategically how they want to approach offense in the game and stuff. And you know, look, I'm all for stuff that works, and I'm just not convinced that it works yet. But the thing is, it's on me to understand it and apply it when necessary. And so I learned a long time ago that fundamentals are fundamentals for a reason. That means they never change. They're always going to be there, win, lose, or draw. And when you have trouble, you go back to those. And so, you know, the fundamentals of baseball are always going to be the same. You got to pitch well. You got to play good defense. And all you got to do is score one more run than the other guy. And so how we do that, and it plays out differently every night. There's no formula that you can just follow the script on every night and say that. You just have to play those three parts of the game the best you can, and you know, keep your focus on that instead of the other stuff, and you'd be okay.
It's not just young pros that you've influenced, but you own Showtime out in the Cool Springs area, a great facility where guys can get swings and cages and field grounders and the like. My son's spent some time over there. Your son Glenn's giving him some hitting lessons. And you guys field some teams there. My son's teams played against some Hojo elite teams. How much do you like influencing younger kids, 8-year-old, 10-year-old, and the like?
I love it. I love it. I love being around these young kids that are hungry. And, you know, I like all the ages, all the age groups. I've spent some time with some of the early teenage guys, the 13s, 14s, 15s, even the 12-year-olds. And I've teach about, I don't know, probably got 5 or 6 kids that are like 10 or younger over there. And we just love, Glenn and I both, we just love to, you know, be positive influence on them, spiritually based if we can, and, you know, do the best we can for the community. And you know, we started our baseball program over there. We got our Hojo Elite group. I think we got about 10 or 11 teams now, different age groups. You know, our goal is to provide an atmosphere of learning and fun. And we try to help kids develop. And when I work with young kids, what I enjoy the most is kind of like fixing things. I like to watch what kids do. There's so much stuff on the internet now that, you know, parents can be just absolutely swamped with things. And what I try to do is I try to simplify as much as possible and use video and that sort of thing with kids and show them, you know, proper mechanics now, because if you learn proper mechanics now, by the time you get to be 14, 15, 16 years old, you know, you're going to have those building blocks already in place that your swing is going to be there, that you have a chance to be a good hitter. And you're not trying to correct major flaws at that age, which can be very difficult. So, we spend a lot of time with that. But I enjoy it. I think I love talking to parents and trying to, you know, get the kids to have the light go on, so to speak, in their brain. It's awesome.
A Mets legend, Howard Johnson, has been our guest. Hojo, thank you for the time, man. It was great going down memory lane a bit here.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, man. Anytime you guys want to talk, I'm always available. I'm a baseball guy for sure. Love the NFL too, but you know, I'm right now baseball's getting ready to crank it up. So you know, I'll be down there at Showtime 5 days a week. So come see me.
Appreciate awesome, it very man. Much.
Thank you. Howard Johnson has been our guest. We'll unpack that, hit some headlines as well. Davey Shepherd will join us at noon with the news that Nashville SC has been kicked out of the MLS Is Back tournament. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Our thanks to Howard Johnson, Hojo, for joining the show. Just the last segment there. Good conversation. Plenty more to get to. We hope to have him back on for sure. We will get to Davey Shepherd from Speedway Soccer coming up at noon today with the headline that Nashville SC has withdrawn from the MLS Is Back tournament. They didn't play against the Chicago Fire last night because of COVID-19 and some positive tests. And now those tests are up to 9 positive tests, and they're headed back to Music City without having played in the return tournament for MLS. It's disappointing, and we'll hit some of those discussion topics surrounding what is an opportunity lost for them coming up at noon with Davey Shepherd.
The groups have now been, two groups have been shuffled to make it all 4 team groups now. So one of the teams from Nashville's overloaded group have been moved to Dallas's slot, and it's all 4 team groups, which makes it pretty simple. Everybody plays in a 4 team group. You play 3 games against the other teams, and then the top 2 teams advance plus some third place teams, I guess, into the 16 team bracket. Last night's game, we'll get to this, I suppose, later, not very good soccer. You would expect some rust, but it was really not good.
Paul, and this came to mind as we're discussing instruction with Howard Johnson there, what he's doing locally. And the business is called?
Showtime.
How many kids now are learning to switch hit? Are there any in Simon's League that are doing this?
No.
Not doing it during games, but trying to learn how to do it.
Yeah, none. I think the thing is, I think Simon would have a talent for switch hitting, but he's not hitting great from the left side, which is where he hits. So I have trouble saying, hey, go take some swings from the right side as a 10-year-old when you haven't, come close to not perfecting, but, I want him to be a really good left-handed hitter before I would tell him, hey, go take some swings from the right side, right?
Yeah,
and so like it was, his pitching. He's pitching pretty well, and then he wants to start screwing around with his pitching motion. And I say, hey, dude, that pitching motion's working pretty well. Why are we? He's like, it's not that comfortable. I go, it's comfortable enough that you're throwing a lot of strikes. Let's stick with that motion. We could work on some grips so that you can find a good changeup. But why mess with what's working?
And one of the topics we can hit with Hojo later at a different time is I think it came more natural to him because it happened in reverse order. His father, he was a natural left-handed hitter, and his father taught him to throw righty so that he could play more positions in the field.
Yeah,
and
being
so
a lefty
that came
fielder
more
is really
natural,
limited.
I think.
Being a lefty fielder is, it throws you to the outfield, really, unless you're a first baseman, right?
Or first base, right.
Yeah. So we've got one of those on our team who's a very good first baseman. But, if he's not playing first base, where's he going?
Right. And then by doing that, by throwing righty, he was able to play third, which he was known for as well. So, it's crazy how those things work out. And it was out of necessity because his dad was like, look, you're going to be able to play more if you learn how to throw righty. It wasn't about hitting. It was about throwing. So,
and that could be really ugly at the beginning. It depends on your level of ambidexterity.
Well, I mean,
If I try to throw, try to do anything with your opposite hand. Now we're older. Exactly. As a kid, maybe
try to write.
A little more fluidity.
Try to write with your left hand, or next time you're on a golf course, try to hit a left-handed golf club.
David, how's your lefty swing?
Very slow.
Yeah.
Though I did play for a number of years with a guy who had suffered an ACL injury. Prior to that, he had swung left-handed, but after the injury, he couldn't push off of that leg anymore, so he switched around to right-handed, and he was better right-handed than he was left-handed.
How long did it take him? Was it pretty quick?
He said it was. Yeah, I believe him.
That's impressive. My brother had that. He had a better gained a really good left foot in soccer because of an ankle injury he suffered that made it. You hear a lot of stories like that, right? A guy becomes good the other direction because an injury forced him to, not because he decided, hey, I'm going to become left-footed or swing lefty, but because of a knee injury like Reed's talking about, or an ankle injury or whatever.
1 week from tonight, it is Eddie George Presents Cigars, Cocktails, and Conversation with Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. You can RSVP for this virtual experience. It is a complimentary link. RSVP by visiting 1045thezone.com. David Reed has the latest headlines for you. And then we chat with Davey Shepherd of Speedway Soccer, of the podcast network here on 104.5 The Zone. And we get the very latest on Nashville SC withdrawing from the MLS's back tournament, what it means immediately, and what it means for the exposure they would have received here from the local fan base that they're trying to build. Then at 12:20, Stephen Godfrey joins us for the latest on college football. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone.